Hello, everybody. Bill Buckmaster with you, midweek edition of The Buckmaster Show. On the other side of the glass, my friend John Couch, engineering and producing the show, and together we do welcome you to The Buckmaster Program. Midweek, Wednesday, May 6, 2020, we are practicing, of course, safe distancing while bringing people together here on the radio in the Green Things Zocalo Village Studio. 10:30, Tucson's voice for trusted news talk, worldwide live listening on my website, buckmastershow.com, and we piggyback with kvoi.com to give you that live stream. All the podcasts available at buckmastershow.com, the live line number, if you would like to ask Councilman Steve Kasachek a question, or if you have a comment for the Councilman, 790-2040. He is the Tucson Ward 6 Democratic Councilman, Steve Kasachek. Steve, how are you, sir?
Doing well. How are you doing, Bill?
Doing real well. Pardon me?
You healthy?
Yes. Trying to stay healthy, you know, trying to keep the immune system up. And that's what we're learning. One of the big things out of this is you really, really want to keep your immune system up and not have a weakened immune system right now. And getting exercise, and I know you're a big proponent of this, it really does help, and especially when you have COVID, so typically attacking the lungs. So getting out and getting exercise, Steve, is so important.
Yeah, I was just out talking to a guy about possibly reopening parts of the ward office to community meetings, and we were talking about the various protocols that we're going to be going through, and talked about that exact thing, you know, the respiratory impact of this. This guy happened to have been involved with polio when he was growing up, and so he's very familiar with the whole respiratory thing. And so, yeah, it's a huge issue, and it's one that we're not close to being done with, unfortunately, either locally or nationally.
Before we get on to that, a mountain being painted blue, I think it's a good idea. It's a tribute to the COVID-19 healthcare workers who have been so involved with this. But it got me thinking, Steve Kasachek, 4th of July will be here before you know it. Could you envision a fireworks show but no kind of gathering at the base of a mountain?
So 4th of July is a couple of months away.
Yep.
I would be surprised if we have a huge gathering around there as we have in the past on 4th of July. It might be an opportunity to do the show, but have people watch it from their homes, and you can see the fireworks displays from miles away. So that might be a nice compromise, sort of a way to celebrate the city at a distance. Respecting the social distance protocols, let families kind of sit in their backyard and watch it from a distance. But I gotta tell you, Bill, I don't see people clamoring for wanting to buy tickets to the theater or football games or whatever, you just name it. People aren't beating down the door saying, "I want to go and sit around hundreds of other people at an outside event or an indoor event right now."
Yeah, and as you know, President Robbins made the announcement here on my program that he said it would be very, first of all, he announced there would be classes in the fall, face-to-face classes, and he was the first major university president, Steve, to make the announcement that he really does not see football happening at University of Arizona Stadium in the fall.
So there are so many moving parts to this. He has, and first of all, credit to Bobby Robbins for really pushing the testing. I had my antibody test done a few days ago. I know lots of first responders, medical care providers have had it done as well, general public as well. So the U of A has really taken a leadership role in terms of getting the testing done. He's doing it statewide with Governor Ducey. Up to a quarter million tests statewide for first responders and healthcare. But when he's talking about opening the campus up, when he's talking about large events, whether it be in the stadium or Centennial Hall, all of it is really subject to what makes sense at the time. And unfortunately, for large events like an athletic event or opening classes back up, you can't just flip the switch on August 26th or pick your date There's a lot of prep work that goes into it. And so what he's really looking at is being able to make that call for in-person classes sometime in the middle of June. Things are evolving, and we will know more, obviously, then than we do now. I was relatively encouraged last week when it came to the numbers in Pima County, and I wrote in my newsletter that it appeared at the time that that we had reached a plateau. We were in the 25, 26 new cases per day level all of last week. And as soon as I wrote that, we had a day that hit 33, and then another one at 33, and another one at 46, and so we're going back up again.
Yeah.
And so, you know, he in his best hope, and all of our best hope, you know, things would be different by the middle of summer, so we can start making those plans. But it is such a moving target, and literally daily the numbers change, and when the numbers change, the protocols, the anticipations have to change as well. You know, frankly, the CDC guidelines, you know, the testing, the contact tracing, the number of beds in healthcare facilities, decreasing cases, the PPE, those criteria haven't changed. Pima County Health puts out a weekly kind of checklist, and they have nine different criteria that they're looking at. And of the nine, only one of them is in the green category, and that's the we're good to go category. And that's the ability to staff and the number of beds we have in our healthcare facilities. But all the rest of them are in either the red or the yellow category, and that just means that we're just not there yet. And there's a serious conversation happening about what does it look like to reopen the city? What does it look like to reopen campus, large major events? You just mentioned the 4th of July. I quite honestly had not thought about that. But it's that is an evolving discussion, and it changes by the day.
Could it be, Steve Kasacek, we're seeing more cases as more testing is ramped up? Could that be one of the reasons we're seeing the more positive cases here in Pima County?
Well, we're going to. And so one of the challenges that we've had this exchange with Bobby Robbins, with the state, and with the Pima County Health folks, is that we're testing about 1% of the people. So clearly, when we test more people, we're going to get more positives. But what you're also going to see is the percentage of people testing positive will probably go down. And so we've seen that drop from about 10% down to 6 or 7%. But the reality is that there are more people out in the community that you're passing in a Safeway or whatever you're passing them that either have the antibodies because they had this back in February or January and didn't realize it. They just thought they had a bad cold or the flu. So they're walking around with antibodies. Or you're walking past somebody who has an active infection and they don't know it yet because it takes 2 to 5 days for the symptoms to even appear. So that's the challenge in terms of just flinging the doors open and saying, let's just pretend this never existed, and let's just go back to normal because the numbers are, you know, pick your number, 45, 25, 6%, 8%, whatever they are. But when you listen to the experts in the health field, Pima County Health, they are saying that, yes, we will see more people go up, but when you're out in public, Bob England from Pima County Health, Francisco Garcia from Pima County Health, and Teresa Cullen from Pima County Health are all saying, assume that the people you're walking by probably have the infection and treat and act accordingly. Wear a mask. Keep your social distance. You know, don't walk up and offer to shake their hand. You know, I mean, just assume that they're infected, because there's a possibility that they are, and this is a highly contagious virus.
Why don't we take the break right here before I venture into another topic, and that topic will be the city's financial situation. But right now I want to talk about Mona's Danish Bakery, home of the Danish Kringle. Steve Kasacek, have you been trying to support local eateries?
Oh, yeah. We order out two, three, four times a week. And and this is a great opportunity to support local businesses.
And they are getting ready. There'll be safe distancing when new guidelines kick in on Monday. But right now at Mona's Danish Bakery, northeast corner of Swan and Sunrise, you can walk in right now, get your bakery goods, and depart. And you can call ahead. Mona'sDanishBakery.com is the website. Phone number is on the website, or if you want to jot it down, 579-1959. And they have all your wonderful, the Danish Kringle would be really good right about now. People are craving comfort foods, and Mona's has been doing very well. Trying to hang in there like all of our eateries, so please support them. They're open at 6:30 in the morning, close at 2 in the afternoon, open right now, northeast corner of Swan and Sunrise. When we come back with Steve Kasacek in the Green Thing Zocalo Village Studio, what is the financial situation for the city of Tucson as we battle now through this COVID-19 crisis? Be right back.
During the coronavirus crisis, Vero Amore restaurants in Plaza Palomino at Fort Lowland Swan and Dove Mountain Boulevard in Marana are still open for takeout and home delivery. You can still enjoy all your favorite Vero Amore menu items, including Tucson's only certified authentic Neapolitan wood-fired pizza. They're all available for takeout and home delivery. More at veroamorepizza.com.
This is Bill Buckmaster encouraging you to fly from Tucson International Airport. When you fly Tucson, you're standing up for Tucson. A new study shows the Tucson Airport Authority's annual economic impact is $7.4 billion, with almost $1 billion of that from visitors flying into the airport. Fly Tucson, and airlines will respond with more flights, bringing more visitors, benefiting all of us. Type in TUS when you book your next flight and fly Tucson.
The Regional Transportation Authority and its member jurisdictions have completed more than 850 transportation projects or service improvements across the region to date. The RTA is a state-established political subdivision and taxing district. The RTA's current half-cent sales tax funds the 20-year plan through June 2026. And the RTA is laying the foundation to develop a new plan. To learn more, please visit www.rtanext.com.
It's easy being green. Promote wind, install solar, drive electric cars, ban mining. Wait a minute! You can't ban mining! Green is good, but hey, no can do without the metals green products need from mining. If you ban mining, you'll ban everything green. And today's minds are on board, researching technologies that provide critical materials for a greener world. Being Green, another miracle from mining. Brought to you by the Southern Arizona Business Coalition.
Cushman & Wakefield PICOR is Tucson's leading independently owned full-service commercial real estate company. Founded in 1985, Cushman & Wakefield PICOR offers leasing, sales, and property management for industrial, office, medical, retail, land, and investment properties in Tucson and Sonora, Mexico. Visit our website at PICOR.com for the latest news from Tucson's commercial real estate sector. That's PICOR.com. Call us at 748-7100.
Are you happy with the news you get? While not all news is good news, you know good reporting when you see it. Check TucsonSentinel.com every day for breaking news and investigative reports. Have your say in the comments. It's all in TucsonSentinel.com, your local, independent, nonprofit news. You can rely on TucsonSentinel.com for solid reporting about immigration, Tucson and Pima politics, everything from the border to baseball. It's independent news without the spin. TucsonSentinel.com. We are watching Tucson.
Green Things is a family-owned and operated plant nursery serving Tucson since 1970. Open daily at 3384 East River Road, Green Things is chock full of plants and pottery from around the world. Green Things is also now home to Zocalo, featuring fine Mexican and South American imports spread over five buildings on the 13-acre Green Things property. For more, visit greenthingsaz.com and zocalovillage.com.
And speaking of Green Things, we're in the Green Things Zocalo Village Studio. Green Things is your home for all of the plants that, I mean, so many people. Steve Kasacek with us on the live line. Steve, so many people are getting into gardening. It's a wonderful activity. I don't know, are you doing any at your home?
Gardening?
Yeah.
All indoors, but yes, I've got a room that has been overtaken by plants, and it's an issue of kind of a domestic dispute going on because some of my plants are hanging over my wife's desk area.
Oh boy!
So yeah, it's an issue, but yeah, I'm into all the green stuff as long as it's indoors and it's in sight and in mind. If once it's out in the backyard, I forget about it.
Well, Green Things has the plants you need. They're 13-acre site. Do you ever run over in that area on East River Road?
Yeah. Yep. Pretty regularly see them, and they're open every day too, so they're doing a good deal.
Yeah, they are, and they're just west of the Brandy Fenton Park. GreenThingsAZ.com is their website. Steve Kasachek with us, Ward 6, Tucson Councilman. We had a Facebook question. Were the death rates used to decide the shutdown of Tucson, and are they the same thing that's being used to reopen? Well, that's the question, but the city is reopening because the state is overruling you. Isn't that the reason there?
Yeah, death rates are a piece of the data, but it is infection rates that people are equally concerned about. But earlier in the conversation, I listed the five different CDC guidelines, you know, testing, tracing, number of beds, the decreasing cases, and the PPE. But you're right, Governor Ducey. First of all, we acted first. We put a stay-at-home deal. We put the social distancing deals into place. Governor Ducey got on board, and he has now passed his own executive order that says stay-at-home and social distancing are the norm statewide. We are preempted by the state from taking more extreme measures than what the state says we can do. His executive order expires, I believe it's on May 17th, so he's going to have to come up with something between now and then to amend what he's already got in place. He has said curbside services can happen. They started Monday of this week for some businesses that were shut down, and then those that are doing curbside can open their doors up on the 8th. But what they have yet to do is to put out publicly what safety guidelines the state are going to require for those stores to open their doors. I will tell you this though, that we will, I'm sure that there is going to be a strong feeling around the mayor and council table that irrespective of what the governor says, we are going to defer to the public health officials and suggest, and that's all we can do, is suggest masks, suggest social distancing in restaurants, for instance. We can do some things such as eliminate fees for what are called temporary revocable easements. That's establishing an outdoor patio. So we can do things locally to encourage outdoor seating to space people out and in the out-of-doors, but you're right. I mean, he will set parameters around the kinds of guidelines we can put into place, and we're going to have to operate within those parameters.
This money from, it's the Federal CARES Act, $95 million coming to the city. There was a piece in the paper about now what does the city do with the money. Could you explain what's going on, please?
Sure. The federal government allocated between $95 and $96 million to the city of Tucson. That sounds great on its face, but what they did about 3 days after that was send the guidelines, the restrictions that are around, you know, how we can use those dollars. If we could simply say we just got a $95 million grant from the federal government to use to replace revenues, that would be one thing. That's not what it is. They have said that we have to use these dollars directly to get reimbursement for COVID-related expenses. So right now we are tracking those expenses, and that's, you know, we're not going to come up with $95 million of face masks. So that's going to be a small chunk. But what we are doing is we are setting up in the city manager's office a new department, and it's going to be the COVID response unit. And we are taking some of the city workers right now who are working from home, telecommuting, and reassigning them to some COVID-related work within the city manager's office. And frankly, three of my staff are sharing time with that unit. They're working in our economic development department, our planning department, doing plan review, code review, permitting review. And so all over the city, we're going to have employees who are kind of sharing time or being relocated over to Ortega's office to work onto this COVID response unit. We found out Friday, we can use some of the COVID money, the CARES money for police and fire, for first responders, for some of their pay. That's going to help us out to the tune of around $30 million in our general fund.
That's good.
It's a big deal because we're facing a deficit going into next fiscal year that could completely deplete our cash carry forward, our rainy day fund. And we don't know right now how extensive the damage is going to be because our sales tax revenues, that's what we live on, they have a two-month lag. And so if you look at a calendar and recognize that for half of the month of March, things were shut down, we won't know what those revenues impacts are going to be until the middle of May. March, April, May, right?
Yeah.
So that's coming up.
St. Patrick's Day is kind of the day, March 17th, where I kind of see the whole thing really going south.
Well, that's when we'll know the impact of March. But all of April will have been shut down. So that's going to be a real disaster. We're not going to know that until June. And so our budget cycle ends on June 30th. We're not going to know the impact of the month of April until we're within a couple weeks of having to set our budget.
Wow.
So this is really a moving target. What we do anticipate is having about a $24 million deficit. About a $24 million deficit for just this fiscal year. But that doesn't take that's between the middle of March and June 30th.
Wow.
Then we have all the next one going forward.
I wanted to quickly turn to the former Benedictine monastery. I drove by there the other day. It looked like work is going on.
Yep. They have been under construction for a couple of months. They are starting to go vertical. They've got a huge crane on site. They've got sunk construction is on site doing their work. I check in with them periodically to see how many workers they've got going to make sure that their workers are safe, and their tradespeople are small enough in numbers right now, and it's all outdoor work that they're doing this. They're able to do the social distance even on a construction site. They're going vertical, and they're anticipating finishing that at the end of next calendar year. So things are moving right along, and I'm hopeful that people are pleased with the outcome of that. The one jewel of that whole public process is that the Benedictine will be preserved and will not be a student housing dorm.
I wonder how that's going to impact Ross's economics, this COVID-19, and getting those units sold or leased or whatever.
That's an interesting question because I've been in touch with some people in the real estate industry. The AC Marriott, for instance, downtown, they were going gangbusters before COVID. 80-90% occupancy. They're in the 10 or 15% occupancy right now, and they're only using one floor. That is typical of the hospitality industry all over this region, all over the nation, but all over the region. I think it's interesting that you had a promo going into the break for the Tucson Airport Authority and what an economic impact they are for the region.
Oh, yeah.
Everybody is doing a reassessment right now. And so, so Ross and everybody in the hospitality and the housing industry is kind of looking at, oh, my gosh, not only are people concerned about COVID, but people are concerned about losing their jobs. They're concerned about depleting payrolls and depleting their savings. And so this is going to have a long-term impact. People are not going to see, gee, it's over, let's flip a switch. It's, gee, it's over, let's look at our household finances, let's look at my job stability, let's look at our savings, And do we really want to go and purchase season tickets to the theater or to whatever you purchase season tickets to? It's going to be a slow ramp up. And the economy, and that's the reason I mentioned we don't know the impact going into next fiscal year, is because we don't know how slowly it's going to take for the economy to start to rebound. And it's going to be a while.
All right, only a few seconds left, but the good news is for our tourism industry, it's all about people are going to want to travel closer to home, and Tucson will be very attractive when people feel it's right. They want to see national parks. We've sure got them in this state, right, Steve Kasachek?
We've got national parks. We've got the Desert Museum. We've got Old Tucson. We've got lots of things in the downtown mm-hmm. core that are worth visiting. So yeah, we're gonna benefit. Because about the time things ramp up, it's going to be snowing in South Dakota.
There you go. All right, Steve Kasachek, stay well. Continue with your exercise program, and we carry on. Thank you very much, sir.
Yes, we do. Thank you, Bill. Take care.
Thanks a lot. Steve Kasachek, Democrat, representing Ward Number 6. All right, coming up on CBS Network News, we'll get a one-minute update, then we'll hear from the great Buckmaster partners, these people so important, not only to me, but to our community. And I really hope you will continue to support them during these very hard times. Let's take a break right now, and we'll be back with you midweek edition of the Buckmaster Show in the Green Things Zocalo Village Studios. Family-owned Jam Culinary Concepts and its family of restaurants has you covered for your special event. Jam caters anytime, anywhere, any size group, and any type of cuisine. Vero Amore, authentic Neapolitan pizza, and Noble Hops. Craft beer and fine fare are synonymous with quality. Call 954-1468 or log on to jamculinaryconcepts.com.
If it can't be grown, then it must be mined. Cause without minerals, you never find your phones, your cars, your solar panels, or your smart TVs with your favorite channels. Hospitals, schools, and public facilities result from mining's vast abilities. Dividends, taxes, and high-paid employment come from mining for your enjoyment. Brought to you by the Southern Arizona Business Coalition.
Vets working hard to save wildlife covered in cactus spines. A skunk left for dead, miraculously saved by a caring citizen. Those are just a couple of the headlines from the nonprofit Tucson Animal Rescue Center, where thousands of animals are cared for each year at its state-of-the-art Far East Side Tucson facility. Rescue, rehab, and release. The Tucson Wildlife Center, saving wildlife for more than two decades. Donate online at TucsonWildlife.com or call 290-WILD.
Southern Arizona is home to one of the world's most trusted sources of information on medicines. The Credible Meds website is visited each day by over 2,000 people from more than 60 countries. You too can learn how to personalize your medications and take control of your health care. Visit CredibleMeds.org today and join Bill Buckmaster each month as he and Dr. Ray Woosley, founder of Credible Meds, give you practical tips on how to get the most from your medications.
The Green Valley News and Sarita Sun cover two of Arizona's most desirable communities. The newspapers reach more than 75% of the communities each week, with a combined population of more than 50,000. The Green Valley News also publishes a dozen magazines each year, and both newspapers publish up-to-the-minute local news online at gvnews.com. The Green Valley News and Sarita Sun, it's all right here.
As a small business owner, I appreciate the services of a top-notch certified public accountant. That's why Michael C. Flowers of Flowers, Rieger & Associates is the CPA firm of the Buckmaster Show. Michael's a former Small Business Leader of the Year in Tucson. He'll professionally handle all of your accounting needs and tax preparation services. Flowers, Rieger & Associates, 6125 East Grant Road, and on the web, flowersrieger.com. During the coronavirus crisis, Moe's Gallery and Fine Framing is open for one-on-one appointments only by calling 795-8226 to arrange a time with Moe or Corinne. No interruptions and no other customers. Moe will even arrange a drop-off at the store's front door and coordinate a virtual design session. Moe's Gallery, Fort Lowell and Dodge, 795-8226 and moesgallery.com.
It's time for the CEO interview series on The Buckmaster Show, presented by Sun Corridor, Inc., representing one of the most dynamic and growing major business centers in North America. Sun Corridor, Inc. is a CEO-driven regional alliance whose members aggressively champion mega-regional issues that impact economic competitiveness and quality of life. The organization has helped to drive significant business investment into the Tucson and Southern Arizona region through primary job creation, resulting in an economic impact of $29.5 billion, with 173 company locates and expansions, supporting nearly 51,000 jobs. For more information, visit suncorridorinc.com.
And joining us on the Buckmaster Show live line, Casey Hill, Executive Director of the Greater Tucson Leadership, which is celebrating this year its 40th anniversary. Hey, Casey, how are you?
Hi, I'm good. How are you doing?
Doing real well. Tell our listeners a little bit about Greater Tucson Leadership. What is the mission of your organization?
So Greater Tucson Leadership, we're a nonprofit, nonpartisan community leadership organization. So our goal is to take individuals in the community and walk them through a year-long program where they get a deep dive into the systems that shape our community, the issues and challenges that we're facing as a community, and to just really learn how our community works. And during that year-long process, they're coming away more informed about the issues and opportunities to get involved, and they're developing their leadership skills so they can be more effective community leaders in the future.
How was the organization, or why was the organization created? What's a little bit of history about it, Casey?
We were founded in 1980. We actually started as a program of the Tucson Metro Chamber. So in the 70s and 80s, chambers of commerce and other economic development organizations across the U.S. and Canada implemented programs like this. And over the course of our 40-year history, we've evolved and changed. We now operate as an independent 501c3, and we've been an independent nonprofit since the early 2000s, so for about 20 years now, we've been operating independently, still in partnership with the Tucson Metro Chamber, among other organizations in the community.
Are you relatively new to the organization, Casey?
I am. I started in 2016, so I'm coming up on my four-year anniversary. My husband and I moved to Tucson in 2016, and I got the job at GTL. I'm the first full-time director the organization has had, so we're seeing a lot of tremendous growth as an organization. We used to be volunteer-run, had some part-time executive directors. I'm the first full-time executive director, and then I just hired another full-time staff person in November, and we also have a part-time staff person working for us as well. So the demand for what we do is growing. So many people in Tucson, they want to be engaged in the community. They want to know about their community, and so there's a lot of interest in what we do, and it's such important work. People, you know, Tucson's such a dynamic community, and really understanding how it operates, understanding the ins and outs, who the key players are, it's attractive to a lot of people because they want to be civically involved.
And they graduate from this program, and a lot of them, right? You've had a lot of leaders go through the program.
We have. We've graduated over 1,000 people in our 40-year history. Some of those have gone on to run for office. We have two current city council members who are graduates of our program. We have other graduates serving in state offices as elected positions. And a lot of our alumni go on to serve on nonprofit boards or develop community initiatives to tackle key issues that are affecting our region.
What is former Tucson Mayor Jonathan Rothschild, how is he connected now to the organization?
Yeah, so last year, Jonathan approached Greater Tucson Leadership with an idea. So over 40 years, we've had this one program, but we've been wanting to expand and offer other programs as well. And he had an idea for a political leadership program. And he approached us about it to partner with him on this idea and to develop the curriculum, because as we see, and, you know, as I mentioned, a lot of our alumni go on to run for public office, but until you step in that realm, you don't really know how to go about running for office. It's sort of a learn as you go. So we've developed a program and we're piloting it this year. It started in January and we have 12 participants. It's a nonpartisan program. And it's really just a very factual-based program about this is if you want to run for office, if you want to run a ballot initiative, if you want to be involved in the political arena in any way, this is how you go about it. This is how you campaign, how you poll, how you fundraise. This is here, you know, we had the chairs of each Pima County political party come and speak to the class to tell them a little more about the political parties and whether or not you should be involved in a political party and how to be affiliated with those. And there's requirements, you know, if you're the number of signatures you have to get to be on the ballot, the ins and outs of all of that. It's really complex. And so our goal with this program is to just give people the factual information that they need in order to do that more effectively in the future and be more successful at it. So we have, like I said, it's nonpartisan. So this year in the class, we have people who are Democrats, Republicans, Independents, and they're there really just to learn more about running for office or volunteering on a campaign.
We're speaking with Casey Hill. Casey is the executive director of Greater Tucson Leadership. What a challenging time, Casey, with COVID-19. How is your organization responding to this problem?
You know, it is a challenging time. And one of the things that we've realized is community leadership is so important, but it's going to be even more important now than ever. We need strong leaders who are going to help us in the aftermath of this COVID pandemic, kind of dig our way out of the impact that it's going to have economically on our community, on our healthcare system, on our education. We need good leaders. So our organization is trying to respond to that as best as we can. We have a class, you know, we're recruiting for next year's class and rethinking our curriculum and how we can address the challenges that COVID's had on our community with our programming next year. We're also thinking in the short term, you know, how we can give back to the community. One of the things we did just a few weeks ago, we partnered with the Barrio Brewing Foundation. So the Barrio Brewing Foundation Fund donated $25,000 to our organization for us to purchase gift cards to grocery stores to employees of restaurants and bars who have been laid off or had their hours significantly cut because of COVID-19 and that, you know, because they had to shut down their restaurants or just do takeout and delivery. And Barrio Brewing Foundation Fund really wanted to give back to an industry that has supported them. And so they partnered with us and we were able to purchase $550 gift cards and distributed those to the employees of restaurants. So there were about 100 restaurants, and each restaurant received five $50 gift cards to Albertsons, Walmart, Safeway, Bash's, Johnny Gibson's, Fry's. We just did a bunch of different gift cards. So each restaurant received five $50 gift cards that they were able to hand out to their employees who were, you know, having some hardships because of COVID-19. So it's just such a great way to give back to the community and do something small to help people through, you know, the challenges that they're seeing right now.
That's very, very good news, helping out a lot of people, and a lot of people need help right now. Casey Hill, thank you very much, Executive Director of Greater Tucson Leadership, for our Sun Corridor, Inc. interview series. Thank you, Casey.
Thank you so much for having me. I really appreciate it.
Thanks a lot. Casey Hill, the Executive Director of Greater Tucson Leadership. For more information about Sun Corridor, Inc., go to their website, suncorridorinc.com. We'll be right back on the Buckmaster Show. It's 12:45 on a midweek edition. Be right back.
Hey, it's Ryan Hansen from Bon Voyage Travel.
And this is Matt Russell from the Buckmaster Show.
Matt, did you hear that Travel and Leisure magazine just ranked the Douro Valley as a top 50 spot for world travel?
Yes, so how about Portugal and Spain for my next culinary and cocktail cruise?
Let's do it on the Douro River aboard the new Ama Douro ship from Ama Waterways.
I'll need a chef's table dinner, winery tours, and other private excursions.
Matt, consider it done.
Thanks, Ryan. Portugal and Spain, here we come. Go to bvtravel.com to learn more.
The Friends of Pima Animal Care Center is the nonprofit partner to our Pima County Animal Shelter. We grant critically needed resources to PACC so that it can continue the amazing life-saving progress it has made in recent years. Your generosity helps us find homes for abused, neglected, and abandoned animals at PAC. Learn how you can help at friendsofpacc.org.
During this coronavirus crisis, Noble Hops, a pub for foodies, is still open for takeout and home delivery only. You can get all of your favorite Noble Hops menu offerings. Come pick them up, or they'll bring them to you. So check out Noble Hops on West Lambert Lane at North La Cañada Drive in Oro Valley, and online at noblehopspub.com.
Buckmaster Show listeners know about my love of travel and flying from Tucson International Airport. I know you value your time and money, so it makes sense to fly Tucson with nearly 60 daily nonstop flights to major hub airports. If you're flying to another airport to take a nonstop flight, you're still making a connection and spending 4 hours on the road traveling to that other airport. That's why I fly Tucson and encourage you to do the same.
The current Regional Transportation Authority plan is funded by a half-cent sales tax, which expires in June 2026. In preparation for developing a new 20-year plan, the RTA Board established a Citizens Advisory Committee to identify priority projects based on public input. RTA member jurisdictions will submit their respective project lists by June 2020 for the CAC to consider for a future plan. To learn more, visit www.rtanext.com.
Let's say you need an honest roofer. Where do you start? Better Business Bureau of Southern Arizona has more than 3,200 accredited businesses ready to help and committed to doing things right. Next time you need a trusted mechanic, plumber, AC company, or florist, go to our website, bbb.org, or call us at 520-888-6161. Better Business Bureau of Southern Arizona. We are here to help you find local companies you can trust.
Welcome back. It is the Buckmaster Show. And as folks, as things start to reopen, many people thinking about getting away when they feel is safe enough to do so. And for your bucket list, how about a place very close to home, just a 3-hour drive from Tucson to Silver City in Grant County, New Mexico? Visit southwestnewmexico.org for the complete listing of some great places to stay in the area and all sorts of recreation opportunities, many of them outdoor oriented, like the Gila National Wilderness. So there's plenty of room to do your social distancing and get your exercise and not bother anyone. Silver City in Grant County, New Mexico. Let's welcome now on the Buckmaster Show live line in the Green Thing Zocalo Village Studio sports journalist Anthony Jimeno, who's been covering sports in this community for about 25 years now. He's senior editor for Lindy's Football Annuals, and his latest venture, which is doing very well, is the local blog, allsportstucson.com. How are you, Anthony?
I'm doing good. How about you, Bill?
Doing well. Your buddy and our friend, Steve Rivera, had a piece that in All Sports Tucson about an hour ago, with news that the University of Arizona coaching staff has decided now to take a 20% cut in pay. I contend, and I don't know if you'll agree or not, but if they had not, the optics were getting very bad by this by almost the hour, correct?
That's probably true. One, it's a trend nationally. We've seen this with other universities where the head coaches are taking pay cuts. You know, it's always couched as voluntarily, of course, because nobody wants to say I involuntarily took a pay cut.
Yeah.
Because that's really bad optics too. But you know, with the whole university structure, taking cuts, especially for those over like $200,000, you know, it's what you have to do. You look at somebody like Kevin Sumlin, and you have to realize his first 2 years at the university, he was really he really kind of came on the cheap, so to speak. You know, it's all relative, of course. But if you remember, he had got a $10 million buyout or so from Texas A&M. So he came here from Texas A&M with this $10 million in his pocket from his old school. So his first 2 years here, he was making $2 million in base salary, which by major conference standards is really low. This year, he got bumped up to 3.5, by the way. So even with his 20% pay cut, he's making $800,000 more than last year.
Oh my goodness! Oh my goodness!
I'm just here to do the math for you, Bill. You can have your own judgment on it. But and Sean Miller, his base salary is about $2.5 million. Those and some of the other higher paid coaches, obviously not in that stratosphere, but Jay Johnson in baseball, Adia Barnes in women's basketball, Mike Andre in softball. You know, they've all signed up, but that's the world of college athletics that we live in. And the only question is, and it may be your follow-up, is it going to get worse because there's great uncertainty about the college football season?
And that is my follow-up after a quick comment about contracts for major college coaches, which will reflect from now on, I am sure, something about unforeseen pandemics, mm-hmm. or however you want to put it, because those words were not in their current contracts.
Right, and some contracts or maybe some non-specific language. But yeah, I think you're right. Probably going forward, there will be very specific language as to a repeat of the situation we're going through now. And I think the thing moving forward is, I mean, what happens? There's been an amazing escalation of coaches' salaries, I want to say over about the last 25 years. Back in, it seems kind of quaint, back in 1995 at Florida State, their head football coach, Bobby Bowden, was the first $1 million coach in college football.
Wow.
So there was one guy making $1 million a year. Now there are 31 guys making $4 million a year.
Mm.
So obviously we got into the wrong profession.
We certainly did.
Should have gone into coaching.
There you go. So we still really, it's kind of talk about moving the goalpost on this, whether or not there will be college football. I see Notre Dame said yesterday they're going to go ahead with a game that they had planned in Dublin, Ireland. I don't know who the opponent was supposed to be, but this was at the end of August. Could you foresee the Pac-12 maybe not starting? And according to our interview that we had with President Robbins a few weeks ago, he was the first major college president to come out and say that it would be very, very doubtful for college football in the fall. Could you see something like maybe the Southeast Conference, like a Clemson, going ahead with a season where, say, the Pac-12 says no? I mean, all sorts of weird scenarios possibly could develop.
Short answer, yes. And that's really been one of the big topics in the last couple of days. If you just look at what's happening geographically around the country, the southeastern part of the United States is opening up a lot quicker than some of the other parts of the United States. So what? And the SEC commissioner said, well, basically said, we don't need the Pac-12. we can play our conference season, and that may be what some conferences end up doing.
Yeah.
Maybe you get rid of the non-conference games, which are usually early, so that also buys you a few more weeks. Which in a few more weeks in today's accelerated world is a lot of time.
Right.
And the SEC may just say, hey, we're going to play 8 conference games, and we'll determine our winner and whatnot. So from their perspective, it doesn't matter if the LA mayor says USC and UCLA can't play in front of their fans. So I think we're going to see a lot of creative potential solutions, just the same way we've seen the NBA is kicking around a whole bunch of strategies and Major League Baseball is kicking around a whole bunch of strategies. Maybe none of them end up working at the end of the day, but everybody is so committed because there's so much money on the table, especially for these college athletic departments, that they will try anything, including maybe playing a few games in the fall and a few games in the spring.
Yeah.
Or maybe starting in January. I mean, they will literally try anything, because even if they don't recoup all their usual revenue, they want to capture a big bucket of it.
So I think what I'm hearing you say, kind of the current thinking, is that not a total ban on college football. If you were a betting man, I don't know if you are, AG, but you wouldn't lay down. Maybe you would lay down a bet that there would be no college football.
I think there'll be something. It won't be normal.
I mean,
it's impossible for, you know, we're not going to get to the end of August and be playing in front of 100,000 seat stadiums. But will there be something at some time? I'm going to say yes. That's very non-specific.
Sure.
But and there may be just pockets of it. There may be certain conferences. Maybe there will be there may be even some realignment just for a year, like they're talking about in Major League Baseball, where you just may be playing teams in your area where you can hop on a bus.
Mm-hmm.
Which, again, in the Southeast you can do. Large part of the Midwest you can do. You can't do that in the Pac-12.
No.
There's not a lot of bus trips.
Not from, you know, Tucson up to Seattle.
Right. I mean, the Pac-12 is a far-flung league.
Yeah.
Geographically. So, again, that's another one of those kind of unique issues to the Pac-12 that some of the other conferences don't have. But, you know, in the Big 12, you could probably get away with that. Texas, Oklahoma, et cetera. But,
right.
Yeah, I just it'd be nice to see something, but it certainly won't be the usual pageantry. But
what?
I think we have a chance to get something.
I've only got about a minute, AG, and there's the situation with pro football. I believe tomorrow they're announcing their schedule. This is going to be very interesting to see whether they I would say they're going to go ahead, even if it's without fans in the stands.
The NFL doesn't have as many complications as universities do, college football. One, there's 32 NFL teams, and there's 130 teams in the major in the football bowl subdivision, the top tier. So there's a lot fewer teams. You don't have to worry about what your universities are doing, and they're really not as dependent on fans.
Right.
To be honest, I mean, they're just play the game in front of a TV and from the TV cameras, and you'll be okay. So I know the NFL, they play some games overseas. They're going to bring those back, but I think they're going to go ahead and kind of plan it as normal.
Yeah, I think so too.
I think the NFL is a really entirely different discussion than college football. So I'd be much more optimistic we'll get, you know, other than the fans, we'll get a normal-ish season.
It'd be nice to have something normal these days, wouldn't it? Anthony Jimeno.
You can watch your Korean Baseball League.
Yeah, that's back, and the Korean Baseball League has started yesterday. Thank you, AG.
Thanks, Bill.
All right, that's going to do it for the Buckmaster Show. Thanks to John Couch, engineer producer. I'm Bill Buckmaster, Dave Ramsey, talking about what you should do with your money, how to save some money. That's coming up next. Have a great afternoon, everybody.